Okay, we're beginning here on Kuf Yud Dalet Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Natu mochsim et chamuro." If the tax collectors, custom officials, government officials come along and confiscate his donkey, v'natnu lo chamur acher. But to replace the donkey that they took, they give him another donkey. And the underlying assumption is that the donkey that they are replacing his with is obviously a donkey that they confiscated or stole from someone else. That luli stim et ksuto, or a similar situation in which thieves go ahead and take his clothing or his cloak, v'natnu lo ksuta cheret, and they gave him someone else's clothing, and again, we assume that that clothing was stolen from someone else, just like they're stealing his clothing or his cloak right now. Harielu shelo, they belong to him. Whatever he gets from these individuals belong to him. Because the owners give up hope of recovering this item. These individuals seemingly are above the law, or this is a recurring problem that these individuals are involved in this type of behavior, and it hasn't been stopped till now. Therefore, if they take an item from someone, the assumption is that they are that they give up hope of ever recovering such an item. So when this individual gets someone else's item, the assumption is that there was Yeush. Rashi over here notes, not only was there Yeush, but there was Yeush Vishinoi Rishut. The Balim gave up hope of recovering the item. In addition to that, the item moved from the ownership of the confiscators here, whether it's the Mochsim or the Listim, and now they gave it over to this individual, so now there's also Shinoi Rishut. And when you have Yeush Vishinoi Rishut, then you have a Kinyan for this individual, and he can keep whatever item was given to him. Hamatzil mina nahar o mina gais, someone who saves an object that was floating down the river, or from a band of soldiers, o mina listim, or from robbers. Im nitya ashua balim, hari elu shelo. If the balim give up hope of getting it back, then the items belong to him. As Rashi notes over here, that is a stira to the earlier part of the Mishnah, because in the first part of the Mishnah, it says that the default is that when Listim takes something, that we assume that the Balim Nitya Ashu, that they gave up a hope of recovery. Over here, the Mishnah says that if they gave up hope, I mean the Balim gave up hope once the Listim took it, so there is a stira in the Mishnah where the first case, or the Reisha, speaks about Listim, the default being that the Balim give up hope of recovery. Whereas over here, the default status is that they do not give up hope of recovery. And therefore, only if we know that they have been nityahesh, that they've given up hope, do we assume that it is his, or the person who has it now can keep it. V'chein achil shel dvorim, if a swarm or colony of bees has flown away, im nityahashu, if the balim have given up hope of recovery, hari yelu shelo, then the individual who finds them or now has them in his property can keep them. Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, when we speak about where these bees came from, where the source of these bees are, then even a woman or a katan can tell us the information as to where these bees originated from. We don't need full-fledged testimony over here. We just need an indication of where the bees came from. A person is permitted to go through his friend's field in order to save his colony or swarm of bees. Bemizik mishalim hashizik. And he does damage while chasing down the bees in his friend's fields. So even though he has a right to do this, meaning that he's permitted to chase after them, nevertheless, he's responsible for any damage that he does when he's chasing after them. Avalo yikotz etzocho. He does not have the right to cut down the bough of the tree, meaning that if they land on a large branch of the tree, then all the bees are gathered together in that single branch. If he cuts the branch, he can take all the bees back together in one shot. If he has to then shoo them off the branch, very hard for him to capture them. Therefore, he would prefer just to cut the branch down. Nevertheless, the Tanakhama says that he does not have a right to cut the bough of the tree. Amanat litenet damim, even if he intends to pay for it, even if he's going to compensate the owner. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Yochanan ben Broka omer, af kotzei tzunoten et adamim. Not only does he have a right to enter the field, and whatever damage is caused, he can repay him for that damage. You can also cut the branch down and take the bees home on the branch, and he'll compensate the individual for that. He has that permission, meaning that we give him the right to get his bees back because they are valuable and it's very hard for him to capture them. And therefore, we give him the right to go after the bees or to capture the bees in order to bring them back to his possession. But then he'll have to compensate or pay for whatever damage or whatever he undertook in order to get them back. Now the Gemara says, Tano, we have a braita. Im natal machzir the balim harishonim. If he took them, meaning that he received a chamor from the mochsim or received ksut from the listim, then he's under an obligation to return the item to the original owner. Kasavar. From that, it sounds like, Yeush kadi lokani. That Yeush by itself is not sufficient to generate a kinyan over here. Umi kara. And therefore, originally, bi'isura at liyade. It came into his possession, bi'isur, because there was not yet Yeush balim. And therefore, he doesn't have a right to keep it, and he has to return it to the original owner. Now, the way Rashi reads this is that there is a stira or a machloket between our Mishnah and this braita. Our Mishnah believes that Yeush kadi kani, that Yeush by itself would suffice in making a kinyan, whereas the braita believes that it's not sufficient in making a kinyan. You could view the machloket in that way, that it simply revolves around whether Yeush kadi kani or not, whether Yeush by itself is a sufficient form of kinyan. But we already saw that Rashi in the Mishnah thinks that we're not just talking about Yeush over here, we're speaking about Yeush vishinoi reshut. And therefore, it would then develop that our Mishnah suggests that you have Yeush v'shinoi reshut, and the Braita simply says that you have Yeush without shinoi reshut. The question is, why? What's the difference between the Mishnah and the case in the Braita? And if you look in the Rebbe Akiva Eiger, in discussing that Rashi, he questions what exactly is the difference here between the Mishnah and the Braita, and why is there a different view in these cases? So once again, if you do not subscribe to what Rashi says in the Mishnah, you could argue that they are simply arguing about whether Yeush by itself is sufficient grounds to generate a kinyan. And that's something that we already saw back on Daf Samach Zayin, that there were Amoraim that argued about whether Yeush by itself was sufficient grounds to generate a kinyan. But there was a very large Tosafot back on Samach Zayin Amud Aleph. And over there, both the Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri offered interpretations of the Mishnah versus the Braita as to why there is a difference between the Mishnah and the Braita, or what exactly is their machloket. Over there, Tosafot, it's actually on the Samach Zayin Amud Bet, towards the end of that Tosafot, and there the Rabbeinu Tam says that the Gemara views the question here about Yeush and not Shinu Reshut against what Rashi says, because the way that it came into his possession is not in a willing manner, but rather, al korcho natnu lo. They gave it to him against his will. He didn't have any choice in the matter as to what they gave to him. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests maybe that does not have a definition of shinoi reshut. And therefore, that's why over there you only have Yeush. And the machloki between our Mishnah and the Braita is about Yeush by itself being sufficient grounds in order to generate a kinyan. On the other hand, the Ri disagrees with the Rabbeinu Tam and suggests that in our case, there actually is Yeush and Shinu Reshut. The question is when the Yeush happened. In our Mishnah, the Yeush preceded the Shinu Reshut. And since the Yeush preceded the Shinu Reshut, you have now Yeush and Shinu Reshut, which according to everyone generates a Kinyan. And that's why in the Mishnah, you can keep the object. On the other hand, in the Braita, the Shinu Reshut preceded the Yeush. And the Yeush only happened after it came into possession of this individual who was given this item because they stole his items and they gave him the replacement item. And since when it was in his possession, that's when the Yeush happened. That was post the Shinui Reshut. And for that reason, you have different outcomes. By the Mishnah, we say there's a Kinyan because you have Yeush and then Shinui Reshut. Whereas by the Braita, you have Shinui Reshut and then Yeush. And that will explain the difference in their halachic view here as to whether he has a kinyan or not. The Rabbi Akiva Eiger on our daf suggests that maybe possibly the machloki between the Mishnah and the Braita is what the Rabbeinu Tam says back on Samach Zayin Amud Bet, which is that, is this deemed to be Shinoi Reshut? our Mishnah might believe that when it's given to him against his will, that's still called Shinoi Rishut, whereas the Braita views that as not being considered Shinoi Rishut, and therefore, according to our Mishnah, you have Yeush with Shinoi Rishut, whereas according to the Braita, you only have Yeush. You can look in the Reb Akiva Eiger as to why he has difficulty with all of these explanations, and why he's not so comfortable in understanding exactly what the tension is between the Mishnah and the Braita. V'ikad Amri, and there are those that say the Lashona Braita is the following. Im balach zir, yakzir the balim harishonim. If he so chooses to return it, he should return it to the original owners and not to the listim or the mochsim over here. My time up, yeush kadikani. What's the reason that he has the right to hang on to this and can decide if he wants to give it back to the original owners? Because yeush by itself is sufficient grounds to generate a kinyan. Similar to our Mishnah, Mihu, Imamar, if he decides to say, I don't want to get hana, I don't want to enjoy someone else's property, even though halakhically it's rightfully mine, Machzir the Balim Arishonim, he returns it to the original owners. As we explained before, the original owners are not the individuals from whom he got this item. Hari Elu Shalo, Mipnei Shehabalim Mityashim. Amar Ravashi, Lo Shanu Elolistim Oveid Kochavim. This is only true about non-Jewish thieves or marauders. Avalistim Yisrael Lo. But if they are Jewish thieves, it's not the case. Savar, the Machar Nakitnale Bedina. Because he thinks that I'll get these guys, I'll get them to the court system. So he feels that if the Listim are Jewish, he'll have a chance in the future to bring them to justice. And therefore, he'll get his item back, and he therefore does not give up hope of getting it back. On the other hand, when it comes to listim oved kochavim, he doesn't believe he'll ever be able to bring them to justice, and therefore he gives up hope of getting it back. That will help explain the difference between the resha and the seifa in our Mishnah, as to in one case we say that the default is that there is yeush, in the other case we say that the default is that there is not yeush. Matkila Rav Yosef Adrabo. Rav Yosef challenged that statement and said it should be just the opposite. Ipcha mistabra. The opposite way around makes more sense, is more logical. Akum de dine begite, the akum that adjudicates cases with force, lomi yayesh, he does not give up hope. Rashi over here suggests that that means that since they adjudicate the cases begaval bezroa, with haughtiness and with power, they believe that he will get the right outcome here. There are two ways to explain that. You can see this also in the Rabbi Akiva Eiger as well. One way to explain it is, since when they come to a final psak in the case, they ensure that it's carried out even through force, then he knows that if he's able to get this to a non-Jewish court, that they will actually extract the item from these thieves, and therefore he doesn't give up hope of getting it back. On the other hand, when he goes to a Jewish court, Israel cave into Amrei Meimar Miyayish, the Jewish court, which does not enforce its psak through physical pressure, rather just through verbal pressure, he doesn't believe, even if he's able to get them to justice, that he'll actually get his item back. The other way to read it is that the nature of the way that they adjudicate cases makes a difference. In the non-Jewish court, where they aren't as married to the procedures or the methods of evidence, over there he has a good hope of actually getting the item back, because he won't have to bring such evidence or a deem. He can just tell them that it was stolen from him, and they might believe him enough in order to extract it from the gazlanim, from the thieves. On the other hand, in the Jewish court, where the thresholds of evidence and the protocols and procedures are very extensive, he says that there is a low likelihood that I'm actually going to be able to get the money back from them. So what Rav Yosef suggests is that he has more hope of getting the items back when they are listim akum, because he believes that the justice system over there will actually serve his interests better, and therefore he has more of a chance of getting it back. On the other hand, if they are Jewish listim and they're going to end up in a Beit Din, he feels that the justice system is not stacked in his favor, and therefore he gives up hope of getting it back. Ella Yitmar, And therefore, Rabbi Yosef suggests that it should be this way, or you should phrase it this way, Aseifa Itmar, that when you say this or make this distinction, it's said on the latter half of the Mishnah, not the first half, which is, Amatzil min akum, umin listim, someone who saves these objects from the non-Jew or from the listim, imniti ashua balim, if the balim gave up hope of getting it back in, then there is Yeush. Stama, the default situation is lo, that it's not that case. Lo shanu ela akum. That's only true when you're talking about non-Jewish listim, mishum de dine begite, because they adjudicate their cases by force, the two explanations that we gave before. Aval listim Israel, when it comes to Jewish thieves, kevan de amri meimar miyayish, since he believes that even if he was able to bring them to justice in the Jewish court system, it would not end in his favor, and therefore he gives up hope of ever recovering those items. So, Rav Yosef sees the statement modifying the Seifa, explaining why the default status is that there is no Yeush, because we're dealing with Listim Akum, where he believes he can recover the item, and that's why there's no default Yeush, whereas by the case of Listim Yisraelim, the default would be there is Yeush, and they would be the explanation of what's transpiring in the ratio of the Mishnah. It's not Hotam. We have a Mishnah in Tarot. Orot shel balabayit machshava mitamatan. When it comes to the skins, the hides of a balabayit, his thought process can bring them to the point of tumah. Over here we're talking about the ability to accept tumah, because an object only accepts tumah once it reaches a gemar malacha. I mean, it's in its final stages by which it will be used in its current form. So, when it comes to a balabayit, if he decides to use the hides in their current form to be a bed or to be a throw of some sort, even though it could continue to be processed and made into something like a shoe, nevertheless, if he decides he wants to utilize it or thinks about utilizing it now in its current state, that's enough to deem it already a gemar malacha, and it would be mekabel tumah. B'shel abdan, when you're talking about a leather craftsman, when his thought process is to utilize them in their current form, that's not enough to have them become tamei, since all the skins or hides that he has are always available for sale, and he will always do whatever the customers want. So even though if he's temporarily using it as a throw or a bed, he really doesn't intend for this to be the final stage. He's just waiting for a customer to come along and ask him for what it is, or what he finally wants from it. And therefore, this interim stage is not considered to be a gemar melacha vis-a-vis the hides. Shel gazlan, when it comes to a gazlan, ein machshava mitamatan, whatever he thinks has no impact on these skins, but shel ganav machshava mitamatan, whereas for a ganav, the machshava does impact. What the suggestion of the Tanakhama or the Chachamim is here, is who is deemed to be the balim, the owners of this item. At this point in time, what the suggestion is that a gazlan is not someone who takes possession of the item, because there is no yeush balim. Since there is no yeush balim, the gazlan is not the owner of the skins, and therefore his thought process about what to utilize them for has no impact on the tumah or the tumah readiness of the object. On the other hand, the ganav, where the balim have yeush and don't expect to get it back, the ganav now becomes the default owner of the hide, and therefore his thoughts as to what to use it for does have impact on the tumah status of this item. Rabbi Shimon omer chiluf hadvarim. Rabbi Shimon believes just the opposite of the chachamim. Shel gazlan machshava mitamatan. When it comes to a gazlan, then we believe that he has taken full ownership, there is yeush, and therefore his thoughts matter. Shel ganav ein machshava mitamatan. Whereas by a ganav, that's not the case. The fi shelo nitya ashu habalim, because the balim never give up hope of getting it back. Now, their malachloket revolves around the difference between a gazlan and a ganav. A gazlan is someone who steals in the open, and someone who the nigzal knows who is the person that stole from him. On the other hand, the ganav steals at night or in a undercover way in which the individual has no idea who stole from him. And here the machloki between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon is which one of those two is the balim to, the more likely to feel that he can recover the item from them, or he cannot recover it? Is it that the gazlan who steals without any inhibition doesn't worry about being in broad daylight and taking things and even people know him? Is he then above the law? And therefore this individual believes that the gazlan, when it comes to a gazlan, the balim are nityashu because they don't believe that they can ever get back this item. On the other hand, by a ganav who does it by night or undercover, he believes that if he does find the ganav, he'll bring him to justice because this individual is afraid of the law. He's afraid of other people. And for that reason, he did it undercover. He didn't do it in broad daylight. And therefore, the balim feel that they have a better chance of getting the object back from the ganav. And that is the belief of Rabbi Shimon. On the other hand, the chachamim believe just the opposite. That since by the gazlan, he's aware of who stole from him, therefore, he believes he can get it back because he knows who the thief is. It's just a matter of time before he brings him to justice. On the other hand, by the ganav, where he has no idea as to who stole from him, there he's much more likely to have yeush because he doesn't believe he's ever going to get the item back since he has no idea as to who stole from him. Now, Amar Ula. Ula tells us about this machloket between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon, machloket bistam. The machloket between them is only when we don't know what the balim are feeling, then we impose on them whatever Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim believe about gazlan or ganav. Aval biyadua, if the balim explicitly stated that they're mityayish, that they give up hope, divrei hakol yeushkani. Everybody believes that yeush is sufficient grounds to generate a kinyan. And again, back on Daf Samach Zayin Amud Aleph, that's where the Balei Tosfot talks speak about Ula's position here. It seems that Ula believes that Yeush by itself is sufficient grounds to generate a Kinyan, and therefore they have to reconcile that with Ula's position back in the Gemara over there. What Ula suggests is that if we know for certain that the Balim have given up hope of recovering it, then there is a Kinyan here for the person that stole it. Rabba Amar, biyadua, nami machloket. Rabba says that even if they know for certain that the Balim gave up hope, it doesn't matter. We impose on them what should be the default status or feelings of the Balim by the case of Ganav and Gazlan, depending if it's Rabbi Shimon or the Chachamim, but the statement of the individual that he gave up hope is not sufficient grounds in order to generate a Kinyan. Amarle, Abaye the Rabba, lo tif legale de Ula. Don't argue on Ula. Bais says the Rabba, don't argue on Ula. The Tznabe Matnitan Kavateh, because our Mishnah is just like him. The Fi Shalom Nityashu Abalim. And the Mishnah from Taharot, which concludes with the terms, the Fi Shalom Nityashu Abalim. The reason that this is true is because we don't believe that the Balim gave up hope. Taima Dolo Nityashu Abalim. The reason being is because we don't think the Balim gave up hope. Aval Nityashu Abalim, if they actually did give up hope, Hari Elu Shalom, then it would be his, and it would be a sufficient form of kinyan. Samalei Anan the Fisha Ein Yeush Balim Matznitin La. I read it as the Balei Tosafot say here. He does not have a different girsa in the Mishnah. He didn't amend the Mishnah, but he says I understand the Mishnah to mean the Fisha Ein Yeush the Balim, because there is no such thing as Yeush Balim in these instances. Meaning that he makes this statement of the Mishnah when the Mishnah says, Lefi shelo nityashu abalim. It's not telling us the state of the balim or the state of mind of the balim, but rather telling you the halachic reality that there is no yeush balim in these instances. It's none. Our Mishnah, natalo mochsim chamuro. Mani, who is the author of this Mishnah? Irabonon, if it's the Rabbanon, kasha gazlan. Gazlan is a problem for them, because our Mishnah says that the default status of a gazlan is that there is yeush. As the Rabbanon believe just the opposite. Rabbi Shimon, kasha ganav. If it's Rabbi Shimon, then the ganav in the Mishnah is problematic. And as Rashi points out over here, the moches is considered to be a gazlan because he comes in broad daylight and takes the item. The listim are considered to be ganavim. So based on that, our Mishnah says both a gazlan and a ganav, the stam or default situation is that we believe there is yeush balim. Bishlam alu Ula, Bishlam alu Ula. I understand with regards to Ula, damar biyadua kani. When we have explicit expression of the individual that there is yeush, then everybody agrees you're koneh. Hakanami biyadua v'divrei hakol. Then the beginning of our Mishnah, the ratio of our Mishnah could be altered by everyone in a situation where we heard the Balim say that they were nityayish. Ela l'rabo damar biyadua nami machloket. According to Rabbo, who says even when it's known that the Balim gave up hope, we still believe that there's a machol with Tinov Shimon and Chachamim, Hamani, who's the author of the Reiser Mishnah, lo Rabbanan, velo Rabbi Shimon. It can't be Rabbanan, it can't be Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara says, Bilistim Mizuyin. The listim that we're speaking about here are armed robbers, v'Rabbi Shimoni, and it is Rabbi Shimon, Bilistim Mizuyin, which are considered to be Gazlanim, because they come in broad daylight as well and take the item. And therefore, the author of that mission is Rabbi Shimon, who says, by cases of Gazlanim, there's a Stam Yeush. And therefore, that's our Mishnah. It's talking about a Mocheis and Listim Mizuyin, both of which we assume that there is Yeush Balim. Where it says, Yehochi Hainu Gazlan. If Listim Mizuyin aren't listed here, now you have two cases in the Mishnah of Gazlanim. My answer is like it did earlier in the Masechta, Trey Gavne Gazlan. There are two types of Gazlanim. There is a regular Gazlan, and there is an armed robber Gazlan, and therefore the Mishnah is marking or mentioning both of them. Tashma, Haganav, Vagazlan, Vaanas, Hekdeshan, Hekdesh, Uchumatan, Chuma, Umasraton, Maser. When it comes to these individuals, they are considered sufficient Balim over the items, so that if they are Magdish them to Hekdesh, it goes through, or if they separate out Chuma, the Chuma is good, or if they take off maser, it's good maser. These individuals are a ganav and a gazlan, which obviously is going to present the problem here in the machloki between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim, because in this braito, the ganav and the gazlan are considered to have the same status. The anas, as Rashi has said over here, is that written next to a gazlan, an anas is someone who is a chamsan, who pays money in order to take the items. If you look back on Daf Samach Bet Amud Aleph, there the Gemara defines a chamsan as someone who gives payment, even though they took it against the will of the Baalim. And that's what Rashi defines as the anas in this case. So these three individuals, we do say that they have sufficient grounds to be deemed the owners of these items, and therefore they're able to do things that owners could do with the items. Again, Mani, who's the author of this braita? Irabonon, if it's the Rabbanon, Kasha Gazlan, Gazlan's problematic because Stam Gazlan, we don't believe that there is Yehush Balim. Rabbi Shimon, if it is Rabbi Shimon Kashu Ganav, then the Ganav is a problem because Rabbi Shimon doesn't believe that a Ganav has Stam Yehush Balim. So Bishlam Ala Ulo, for Ulo, it makes sense, the Amar Bia Duakani, because he says that everyone agrees in the case where we know for certain that the Balim have Yehush, that is considered to be Yehush. And then there's a Kinyan over here. Hachanami Bia Dua V'Diriyako. He can explain this Breita similar to what he did in the previous scenario, and say that it's all according to everyone in a case where the Balim declared that they had Yehush Balim. Elo the Rabbo, Damar Biyadua Nami Machloket, according to Rabbo who says that even in a case where the Balim declare that they have Yehush, the Machloket still persists between the Rachachamim and Rabbi Shimon, who's going to be the author of the Mishnah. Ganav and Gazlan, if they have the same din, is going to present the problem for each one of them. Amani, Lo Rabbanan, Velo Rabbi Shimon. In that case, the author can't be the Rabbanan nor Rabbi Shimon. Where it says, again, Hachanami b'listim mizuyin. We're going to say that it's a case of listim mizuyin, which will have a din of a gazlan, v'Rabbi Shimoni, and therefore it's Rabbi Shimon, because then you have gazlan and gazlan, in essence, and according to Rabbi Shimon, a stam gazlan, there is Yehush Balim. Where it says, again, Ihachi hainu gazlan. If that's the case, then you have basically gazlan written twice in that braita. Tregavne gazlan, there are two different types of gazlanim. Which is, there's a gazlan, which is a normal type of thief, who does it in broad daylight, but there's also listin mizuyin. Tosafot over here points out that earlier in the Masechta, there was a machloket as to what the status of listin mizuyin are, as whether they're deemed to be a ganav or a gazlan. And over here he says that even if you believe over here that the definition of the listin mizuyin is gazlan, that might have to do with the fact that they are stealing in broad daylight, despite the fact that for Tashlume Kefil, they are deemed to be Ganavim. And then Tosfot says, just the opposite afterwards, even if you believe that the Listim Zuyin don't pay Kefil, you still might call them Ganavim, because they hide from people. They don't hang around, they hide, and then they ambush their victims, and so they don't go around like a Gazlan in broad daylight. So Listim Zuyin have aspects of them that make them like Ganavim, aspects that make them like Gazlanim, and therefore, even if you define them in a certain context as to be a ganav or a gazlan, that doesn't necessarily mean that in other contexts you would actually give them the same status. Or the fact that they are sometimes called ganavim and sometimes gazlanim is not necessarily irreconcilable. Vibaitema, and some suggest Hamatnita Rabihi, that this Braita is actually authored by Rabbi, the Tanya Rabbi Omer, Ganav Kigazlan, that a Ganav has the same status as a Gazlan. Vikaimalon Kigazlan de Rabbi Shimon. And in a second, we're going to establish the fact that when he says that a Ganav is like a Gazlan, it means that he believes that the Gazlan, the din is like Rabbi Shimon, that the Gazlan has Stam Yehush Balim. And therefore, when he says the Ganav is like a Gazlan, he means that both Ganav and Gazlan, we believe that Stam, the default scenario is that they have Yehush Balim. So Gufa, so now the Gemara is going to discuss this position of Rabbi. Rabbi Omer, Omerani, Ganav ki Gazlan. I say that a Ganav has the same status as a Gazlan. Ibailo. So now the Gemara queries, ki Gazlan de Rabbanon. When he says the Ganav is like a Gazlan, does it mean like the Gazlan of the Rabbanon Kamar, Vilokani, and therefore the default status is that neither a Ganav nor a Gazlan will have a Kinyan, because neither of them have Stam Yehush Balim. Odilma ki Gazlan de Rabbi Shimon Kamar. Or does he mean when he says like a Gazlan, he means like the Gazlan of Rabbi Shimon, who we believe has Stam Yehush Balim, and therefore when you say the Ganav is like the Gazlan, that means that we believe in the default scenario, both a Ganav and a Gazlan have Yehush Balim Bekani, and then there would be a Kinyan, and that's why, again, we thought that he might be the author of that Braita. Tashma, Lu Mochsim Chamoro, the Mishnah, our Mishnah here, where the Mochsim confiscate this individual's Chamor, and then they give him back another Chamor. Mani, who's the author of this Mishnah? Irabonon Kasha Gazlan. If it's the Rabbanon, then the Gazlan is a problem for them. Irabi Shimon Kasha Ganav. As we mentioned before, the Mochsin have a din like a Gazlan, and the Listim have a din like a Ganav. And so therefore, again, we present a problem for the Rabbanon and Rabbi Shimon, because in a single Mishnah, both the Ganav and Gazlan have the same din. So, Iyamart Bishlama Rabbi Ke Gazlan de Rabbi Shimon. If you say that Rabbi's position is that when he believes that a Ganav is like a Gazlan and like Rabbi Shimon Kamar, Vikani, and there is a Kinyan, Hamani, who's the author of the Reisha of a Mishnah, Rabbi Hi, Mishum Hochi, Kani. And for that reason, there's a Kinyan both for a Ganav and a Gazlan, because he believes that a Ganav is like the Gazlan, and for Rabbi Shimon, the Gazlan is Stam Yush Balim. Eliyah Martki Gazlan de Rabbonon Kamar, if you believe when he says the Ganav is like the Gazlan of the Rabbonon, which means Velo Kani, that neither a Ganav nor a Gazlan have the ability to make a Kinyan here, because there is no Yehush. Hamani, then, who's the author of our Mishnah? Lo Rabbi, Lo Rabbi Shimon, Velo Rabbonon. None of these individuals could be the authors of our Mishnah, because none of them have a position that Ganav and Gazlan both have the status, or default status, of Yehush Balim. Where it says, Hachamai Eskinon, like we had answered before, Belisti Mizuyain, that it's a case of Listi Mizuyain who are deemed to be like a Gazlan, V'Rabbi Shimon hi. Magamar again says, Yihachi Hainu Gazlan. If that's the case, then why does the Mishnah mention Gazlan twice? Tregavne Gazlan. There are two different types of Gazlanim. There's Listim Zuyin, and then there's a regular Gazlan. And therefore, the Mishnah mentions both types of Gazlanim, even though their din is the same. Tashma. Haganav va'gazlan va'anas, hektashan hektesh, trumatan truma, umasrotan maser, mani, who's the author of that Braita that we just brought at the end of the previous Amud, irabonon, if it's the Rabbanan kasha Gazlan. The fact that the Gazlan is deemed to be an owner and that there's Stam Yehush Balim, that's a problem for the Rabbanon. I Rabbi Shimon, if Rabbi Shimon is the author of that Braita, Kasha Ganav. Ganav presents a problem then, because Ganav is indicated to have Stam Yehush Balim in their Kuneh. I Amart Bishlama, Ganav ki Gazlan de Rabbi Shimon Kamar. If you believe that Rabbi, when he says that the Ganav is Gazlan, means in the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, that means that both of them have Stam Yehush Balim, Shem HaChikoni. Then we understand who the author of our Braita is, because both the Ganav and Gazlan have a Kinyan here. Ilamart Ganav ki Gazlan der Abonon. If you think he's saying the Ganav is ki Gazlan der Abonon, which means neither of them have a Kinyan over here, Hamani, who is the author of this Braita? Again, the Gemara answers like it did before. Bimlisti Mizuyain. We're talking about armed robbers. Rabbi Shimon hi. Ihachi Hainu Gazlan. The Gemara asks the same question again, which means that now we have the Gazlan mentioned twice in that Braita. Tregavne Gazlan, there are two different types of Gazlanim. Amalei Ravashi the Rabba, Tashma, the Matne Rabbi the Rabbi Shimon Brei, because Rabbi in explaining the Mishnah said to Rabbi Shimon his son, Lo Davar Sheish Bo Achrayut Mamash. In the previous Mishnah, when it says that we're talking about items that are of real property, those items the children have to give it back if they are still extant. Rabbi over there said it doesn't literally mean real property or real estate. Elo Afilu Parav Choresh Ba Chamor Michamer Acharav. It is discrete objects where it's clear that these are stolen items, like, for instance, a cow or an ox that he is plowing with, or a chamor that he's using to carry loads. In all those cases, chayavin lachzir mipnei kvod avihen. They have to return it because of the honor of their father. Since the item is clearly recognizable as the stolen object, people are going to speak or say that that's the object that so-and-so stole from this individual. And therefore, it's going to be a negative for their father. And for the covet of their father, they have to return it. Taima mipnei kvod avihen. The reason they have to return it is only because of the honor of their father. Halav kvod avihen. Had it not been for the honor of their father, lo, they would not have that requirement. Shma mina. Rabbi Gazlan, the Rabbi Shimon Kamar Shmamina. It's clear here that Rabbi believes that there is a kinyan in these cases, and therefore there was already a kinyan because of the Yeush and then the Shinu Rishut to the Yorshim. And the fact is that they are then have a kinyan on it. That means that they don't have any legal obligation to return the item since they have a kinyan on the item. And therefore the only compelling reason for them to give it back is Mishum Kvod Avihen, for the honor of their father, not because they have a legal obligation to return the stolen object. And that proves to us that Rabbi believes that Stam Gazlan has Yeush Balim, and therefore there is Yeush and Shinei Rishut over here, and therefore we can conclude that Rabbi's position is that when he says Ganav Ke Gazlan, he means Ke Gazlan de Rabbi Shimon, and that means that both by a Ganav and a Gazlan, there is Stam Yeush Balim. Now the Gemara says that the Mishnah continues and says, V'chein Nachil Shel Dvorim, same is true of a swarm or a colony of bees, my V'chein. What does it mean? And also, what is the Mishnah adding by adding in this case of the bees? Hachikamar, afilu nachil shel dvorim. Even in the case of the nachil shel dvorim, the kinyan derabonon hu, that you don't really have a kinyan midoraita on the bees, but mishum darche shalom, the rabonon established that you do have a kinyan, you do have ownership over these bees. Sagadat chamina, ha, kevin derabonon be'almahu dekanile, since his only acquisition or possession of this item is a din derabonon, then we would assume in any default scenario he would give up hope because he really doesn't have true ownership or balut over these items, and therefore he would be more likely or apt to be miyayish, to give up hope of getting this back. Kamash Malon, that the Mishnah tells us, only if we know that they have given up hope do we believe that there is yeush, then that's in. Ilo, but if we don't hear that, the default status is no, that there is no yeush balim. So despite the fact that he has a lower form of legal ownership over these items, that doesn't mean or necessitate the fact that he will give up hope of getting it back more easily. And that's what the Mishnah is going to teach us, that he has the status that we have to know whether he does have Yeush or not in these situations. So now the Gemara continues with the final part of the Mishnah that says that in the case of the Nachil Dvorim, we allow an Isha or a Katan, a minor or a woman, to testify as to the source of these bees. Isha v'katan b'nei idud nino? Since when is a woman or a minor someone who is kasher le'edut? Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, hachal b'yaskina. What's the case here? Kegon she'yubalim miradfim achareyem. We see the owners running after the bees. Isha v'katan misichin lifi tumam. And this woman or this minor are discussing it not in the context of edut. They're simply in conversation. They note, oh, so-and-so is running after his bees. And they say, oh, it left from this location, it came out of his property. So they're not doing it in a manner of testimony, but rather in conversation, as an aside, they mention this item, and therefore we can utilize that to reinforce the fact that this individual is really the owner of these bees. And as Rashi notes over here, there's circumstantial evidence that it's his, because he's chasing it down, plus we have these individuals speaking about the fact that it's his. Amar Rav Ashi, Ein Misiach Lefitono Kasher, so Rav Ashi makes a statement that the only time that we use this concept of Mesiach Lefi Tumo, where a person is just speaking in normal conversation, not intending to testify, but we believe them if in the context of that normal conversation they give us information that is important, we only believe that with regards to an aguna, a woman who is uncertain as to the plight of her husband, and we want to know if he passed away, if something happened to him, in a conversation with an individual, it comes up that he knows that this individual was killed or this individual was taken captive, the information that he gives to us is important. If he testified in a context of testimony, he would not be believed. But since here he's not testifying, but simply talking to us in a regular mundane conversation, we do believe him. And that's a kula because of the aguna, to protect agunot, so we can get this information. Similarly, Ravina, the Rav Ashi below, is your statement really true that it's uniquely applicable only by the case of Edut Isha Vaguna, Reinachil Shel Dvorim? Our case in the Mishnah, which we just described according to Rav Yehuda Mashmuel, that this is a case of misiach lefi tumahu, where it says, shani nachil shel dvarim, the kinyan derabonon hu. Just like we said before, that the nachil shel dvarim, the misiach lefi tumahu is allowed to be used here because we're talking about an issue midirabanan. Since there's only a kinyan midirabanan, the testimony of these individuals can also be brought up in this context because of the fact that we're only dealing with issues midirabanan. Whereas by the case of Aguna, where we're dealing with Arayot and Adin Doraita, over there, that's the only location where Misiach Levi Tumo is considered at a level Doraita. Or it says it with Doraita low. Is that really true, that that's the only case where Midoraita we use this concept of Misiach Levi Tumo? V'amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Maseh Adam Echad, Shaya Misiach Levi Tumo. Again, he was speaking in a mundane conversation, not in the context of a Dut or testimony of Omer. Zachuni Aniti Nok, I remember when I was a young kid, when we kuvani aktefo shel abba, and my father used to take me on his shoulders, votziani bebeit sefer, he took me out of school, out of the cheder, vivshituni et kutuntei, he took off my cloak, vihit bilani, dvene lecho truma l'erev, and he put me into the mikvah so that I could eat truma that evening. V'Rabbi Chanina mesayim bo, hachi, and Rabbi Chanina concludes that story, v'chaveirai bedili mimeni, and my friends used to stay away from me, v'yakarino ti, Yochanan ochel chalot. And they used to nickname me Yochanan, the one who eats chalot, or eats chala. Be'oleo Rabbi l'ku'una alpiv. And Rabbi established that this individual must be a Kohen, based on his memories, based on what he was saying. Now again, he wasn't testifying, he was just speaking in a normal conversation, and Rabbi, listening to the conversation, says this guy is definitely a Kohen, based on his memories from his childhood. Gemara says again, betruma derabanan, that that's only in the case of truma derabanan, that we establish the fact that he is a Kohen because of Misiach Lefi Tumo. And Rashi notes that this is Rabbi Lishita To in the Gemara in Ketubot, because Rabbi lives Achar HaChurban, and there in the Gemara in Ketubot notes that Shviat Bizman Hazeh is the Rabbanan, and similarly over here, he will subscribe to that position that also Truma Bizman Hazeh is only Mid Rabbanan because the Kedusha Shnia was only temporary and not permanent. When it says Vakate Doraita Lo, is it really true that on the level Doraita, Misiach Lefi Tumo is not sufficient grounds for us to use or utilize in place of evidence or testimony? Vaha. Vaha kiata Rav Dimi Amar Rav Chana Kartigna v'Amri La Rav Acha Kartigna Mishtai. They told over, Maseh Bad Lifnei Rabbi Shua Ben Levi v'Amri La Maseh Bad Lifnei Rabbi. There was this incident or a case that came before Rabbi Shua Ben Levi or Rabbi, b'tinok echad sheya Misiach Lefi Tumo. Again, a young child that was just speaking in a casual conversation. V'Amar. Ani v'imi nishbeinu l'ben ha'akum. We were taken captive by the non-Jews. Yetzati lishov mayim dati almi. Whenever I went out to draw water for us, I always had my mind on my mother. L'koteitzim, when I went to gather wood, dati alimi. I had my mind on my mother. V'siya rabbi alpiv l'kuna. And again, Rabbi acted on this statement of the young child and allowed her to marry a Kohen. And we don't assume because she was a shvuya that she had the din of a zonah, and she wasn't allowed to marry a Kohen. Where it says, Bishvuya hekilu. In cases of captivity, again, the Chachamim also make you, similar to instances of Aguna, Shvuya has that same status of the Hakalot, and therefore we allow Misiach Lefi Tumo to be used on a Doraita level, even in those situations. And Rashi claims the reason that we are make you by Shvuya is because it's only a Safek. We don't know for certain that something happened. So combining the fact that it's a Safek with the terrible situation that she was in captivity, we're willing to be menkel if we have some evidence to the fact that she was not compromised in that situation. Avaloi kotzit socho. The Gemara here says, Tanya, Rabbi Shimon beno shel Rabbi Yochanan ben Broko omer, Tanai beitin hu. It is a condition of beitin, meaning that it's considered to be a civil law that the person is allowed to go down into the other person's field and cut the bough off the tree in order to get his bees who. Shei yoreid l'toch sedei shel chaveru, v'kotzei tzocho shel chaveru, l'tzil et nechilo. Notel d'mei tzocho, mitoch nechilo shel chaveru. And then the individual can collect the value of that tree or that branch that he cut down from the bees that the individual took. So there is a t'nai beit in that. There is a means for paying the individual who takes the loss here, but also gives rights to the individual who lost his bees that he can get them back by taking the branch instead of having to try to chase them back to his yard. Utnai beitin hu. And another one of these institutions of beitin is she'e shofech yonoyu umitzel edufshano shel chaveron. That if his friend is carrying honey and there's some problem with the utensil in which the honey is and it's leaking, that this individual pours out the wine from his barrel and collects the honey. And then he can make a claim for the wine that he spilt out from the honey of his friend. We saw earlier in the Masech that Tosafot noted that it's only in a case where the individual asked him to help out. If he does it voluntarily, he may not have a claim to get repaid for the wine. It's only in the case where the person who is holding the honey asks for help, and because of that, he's entitled to repayment of the wine. Utanai Beit Din Hu, and another institution of the Beit Din, or conditions of the Beit Din, are Shei Mifareket Eitzav V'Toein Pishtano Shel Chaveiro, that he will unload his wood that he's carrying and instead take the flax of his friend. Again, Notel Dmei Eitzav Mitoch Pishtano Shel Chaveiro, and then he'll get repaid the value of his wood from the flax that he helped his friend with. Again, here, the value of the flax far exceeds that of the wood. And so if his moving truck broke down or his chamor died, then the individual can ask the other person to give him help and actually demand of him that he drop the wood, take his flax. But the one who drops the wood will then get his money back through the flax of his friend. And again, over here, in all these situations, the value differential is so significant that we allow the party who's going to sustain the tremendous loss to take action to protect against losing that tremendous value. But then we grant a right to the party who's injured or has to give up something that they get to collect out of that value, whatever they have given up in order to facilitate it. Shemat Kain, Hinchil Yoshua Yisrael et Ha'aretz. Because these are the conditions or part of the code that was put together by Yoshua when he came into the land to have these laws put into place in order to facilitate better decision making that will preserve the greater value of society rather than just focusing on the individual rights of people. And therefore, it will be for the greater good of society that these are put into place or instituted. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Yud Daled Amud Bet.